All right, ready?
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on July 22nd, and we're going to be talking baseball tonight as we do part three of our Growing Up Cuban in the United States. We have a fabulous panel tonight. The Reyes brothers are contacting us from New York, and we have our friend Enrique here in Dallas, and it's going to be a lot of fun as we talk about Cuban baseball. But, you know, let me just briefly tell, I have a message here, by the way, to the Yankee fans. As of right now, the Rangers are leading the Red Sox 3-1 in the sixth inning. So that means we're going to be sweeping the Red Sox, you Yankee fans. So the next time you guys play the Angels, I hope you guys win, Jose. Hey, Felix, I hope you guys win the next time you play the Angels. I mean, we're doing our part. We're beating up the Red Sox, man, and you guys are just laying dead when you play the Angels. We need your help. Okay, Jose and Felix, what do you say about this?
Oh, I hope so, too.
I'll tell you what, if there's a chance of sweeping them, I'll go to the stadium with the broom.
Well, I tell you, I think we're going to sweep them tonight. So far, after six innings, we're winning 3-1. I'll keep you posted on the
great
score, but it looks real good right now. But here's the problem, guys. As I said before, we're helping you. We're beating the Red Sox, but you guys are not beating the Angels. So we're expecting that from you guys.
I'm sure we have at least probably 8 or 10 more games with the Angels.
Is that right, that many?
Do something about it, please.
Yes, yes. That was our friend Enrique. See, Enrique and I are going to be the Rangers fans tonight. And
yes.
Felix and Jose are going to be our Yankee fans. And we're just trying to send you a subtle message here, guys, that you need to beat the Angels because we're doing our part in beating the Red Sox. But the Red Sox have a great team, I tell you. They really have a great team, and so do the Yankees. They have a great team. So one of you two guys, I'm sure, will win the American League East.
This is Jose.
I
think we, the Yankee fans, got to concentrate on beating Boston. We're having trouble beating them. We've lost 8 games to them in a row. I mean, we haven't beaten them yet this year.
And then you can't forget Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is a good team.
No, you're right. That's a good team, too.
Well,
I tell you guys.
Yeah,
I tell you what, guys. We always play a little Cuban music when we do these shows. We're going to play a little Cuban rhythm here. And then after that, we'll be we'll talk to my friend Enrique, and we're going to talk a little bit about Cuba and Mexico. have it, Enrique, a little salsa as a prelude to your presentation. Let's
very
welcome.
Right?
You like that a little bit, huh? I know you're
a big fan of
music. I couldn't get Enrique. I'm disappointed because I couldn't get you a little music here from Trio Matamoros or something like that. So.
Oh, that would have been outstanding.
That would have been outstanding. Yes.
That.
Yeah. Well, I just couldn't get it because you know we're limited somewhat as to the music we can play. But maybe the next time, I'll make you a bet. The next time,
okay.
I promise I will. I will bring El Trio Los Matamoros. I know
I'll
you grew
you
up.
To it. Okay.
I know your father used to love that music. He used to tell me.
Oh
that.
Yeah. That,
yeah.
That's true.
Anyway, but one of the things that really characterized Mexican baseball during the 1940s and the 1950s is that many black Cubans who couldn't come to the United States did have the opportunity to play in Mexico, and I thought maybe we could recollect. Remember a little bit with our friend Enrique about some of the great Cuban players who played in Mexico, Enrique. So why don't you tell us about some of the ones that you remember?
All right. Let's first remember that we had, beginning in 1945, two baseball leagues in Mexico, one in the summer, one in the winter. The old and venerable Mexican League was still in the summer, but now in my home area in the Pacific Coast, we had a winter league called La Costa del Pacifico. And they would compete each other, and I used to listen in the radio to all these games. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know if these people that I was listening to were white or black or what. Until later on, I realized why they didn't get to the major leagues. They were not white. They were black. And I can tell you about a couple of names that pop up immediately. The first one is Martin Diego. We're talking about a fellow who could play all positions, who could bat, who could pitch very well. I know that he had a season in which he got an ERA of 0.90. Can you imagine that? He was quite a pitcher. And he
was
also,
that in Mexico? I'm sorry.
In Mexico. And he had a lifetime batter average of 317. So this fellow could do everything. He was a wonderful player. And almost parallel to that was another fellow that I admired tremendously, Ramon Bragaña. Ramon was an excellent pitcher. He had a season of 30 wins in 1944, and he could also bat. And the funny thing about Bragaña is that when he was not pitching, he liked to play one other position. You're not going to believe it. He liked to play catcher. That was really amazing. I couldn't believe it. I know also, and I remember clearly, two fellows that became famous because of their own playing time, but also because their children became good players. I'm talking about Santos Amaro, Cangurito, whose son Ruben played, and now Ruben Jr. is in management with the Phillies in the major leagues. And the other one was Pedro Charolito Horta, whose son Jorge I met when he used to play for the White Sox in the 70s. Those two fellows also were very good.
What was the last name?
The first one is Santos Amaro.
Amaros. Yeah,
the father of Ruben Amaro. And the grandfather of Ruben Amaro Jr., who's the general manager of the Philadelphia Phillies.
Right.
Santos played in Mexico from 1940 to 55, approximately.
Wow.
He was active for a long time. He had a lifetime average of over 300. And Pedro Horta, the father of Jorge. Pedro used to play third base, and he was a specialist in stolen bases. He had 137 stolen bases in his career. Those fellows I remember very well. And I know you're trying to create an ideal team, so let's not forget the best first baseman I ever saw at the time, René González. René won three batting titles in the Mexican League. He was a huge fellow, very tall, and, of course, black. That's why he never made it to the major leagues. And another one that I used to admire tremendously because he played all his career in Mexico in the Pacific League. He was never in the Summer League. That was Agustín Bejarano. He was also a wonderful base stealer. I remember a season in which he stole 33 bases, and he broke the record for the season. And I want to mention, finally, although this fellow that I'm going to talk about, he did make it to the major leagues, only because he played for such a long time that he was able to make it finally. That was Lino Donoso. Lino was a lefty. And Lino was the first pitcher, long time after Martin Diego, to win it. I mean, to have 18 strikeouts in one game in the Mexican League. Lino was outstanding as a pitcher, but also he was a true Caribbean, a true fellow from Cuba. You know, he was happy. He was always dancing. It was a different time because it wasn't taken so seriously as they do now. Players used to joke around, play pranks on one another during the game, not just after the game. And Lino was the specialist in this. He was always cracking up, and he was always making everybody laugh. So those were my favorite players, all of them black, all of them Cuban, all of them outstanding.
Damn. Now, this one quick question that I have, Enrique. The Mexican League in the summer, was it like a AAA league? Did it compete with the AAA up here?
Yes, it did. Actually, both of them were AAA. There was a time when the Pacific League, which was in the winter, began participating in a Caribbean championship, not unlike the one we have now. You know, the Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and Mexico now participate in a Caribbean championship. But at the time, it was not national. It was by teams. I remember very clearly that we used to hate, sorry guys, the Sugar Kings.
Oh,
because they always beat us.
Yes.
They would always win, and we used to hate them, really. They were wonderful players.
Yeah, the Sugar Kings were, of course, the Cuban professional team that I don't know, but I know in the late 50s they were part of the Cincinnati Reds organization.
Yeah, they were, exactly.
They were like the AAA team of the Cincinnati Reds. And in 1959, my father tells me that in 1959, the AAA World Series was between the Minneapolis Millers and the Havana Sugar Kings.
Uh-huh.
And the series was played in Minneapolis and in Cuba. And there were many, many players who made it to the majors who were in that team. And there's lots and lots of folklore about that particular series, because Castro apparently showed up at one of the games, you know, with his military guard, and it created quite a scene. But this particular, were these players, Enrique, at the time when they were playing in that Mexican league, were these players very well paid, or was it did they make a lot of money by Mexican standards back then?
Yeah, but by Mexican standards, no doubt. In fact, also probably by Cuban standards, not as the major leagues, but it was a very good opportunity for them. In fact, many of them actually remain in the country. They stay forever. Horta stayed. Amaro stayed there. Lino Donoso stayed there. But many others went back to Cuba. Bejarano and Diego and Bragaña, they did eventually go back to Cuba.
And one quick...
Enrique, I want to ask Enrique, this is Jose, Jose Reyes.
Yes, sir.
Enrique, how many games did they play in the season?
The summer league was long. The summer league was 80 games, but the winter league was very short. It was only about 30.
So the summer league, which was in the Pacific side, right?
No, the summer was in the center of the country. That was Mexico City and the West Coast. I mean, the East Coast.
And how many games? They played 80 games.
There was 80 games.
And you had that one pitcher who won 30 games, right?
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
No, unbelievable. He really was outstanding, out of this world. Nobody else ever won 30 games in that league, only him. Now, imagine him also playing catcher sometimes. He was another kind of player at the time.
Yeah, today they wouldn't let him do that.
Of course not.
They would try to
pamper them.
Yeah, well, the owner would say, hey, I got too much invested in you.
Yeah.
Imagine Martin Diego playing
all the positions in the field, when he was capable of striking out 18 batters in one game. They would never allow him to do that today.
No, not at all. Let me ask you, Enrique, about another player that I've read about, another Cuban black who played in Mexico. He has my name, Silvio García, who quite a player too.
That's true, yeah.
And
he was very good, too. He actually played in both leagues, in the summer and the winter league. The winter league, the one in my area of the country, used to brag that they were actually the authentic representatives of baseball, because the legend says the first time baseball was played in Mexico, it was at the port of Guaymas, which is on the Pacific coast. And apparently the reason for the baseball arrival in Mexico was following the railroad line. Whenever the railroad was coming south, whenever the railroad arrived, baseball would be played. And apparently Guaymas was the first place where they played. It's arguable, but it's possible. And that's where Silvio was. He played in Guaymas several times.
Enrique, let me ask you a question. Then, when you say this old black league, they were all Cubans? No, there were also other...
There were also a lot of American players.
They
never made it to the major leagues because they just couldn't, because they were black. Funny enough, many of them got nicknames in Spanish, although their names were in English.
Right.
For instance, there was a fellow by the name of Marvin Williams. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
No.
Marvin was a very good player, a home run hitter, and for some reason, they nicknamed him La Coqueta. Now, it doesn't sound very masculine. I don't think he knew what they were saying to him. He accepted it very well. He was a wonderful player, too.
The other thing that's interesting, too, is that this league, I mean, this is a AAA league.
Right.
What brought the Cubans to play in Mexico? Why didn't they just stay in Cuba and play?
Well, some of them were very well paid, first of all.
Right.
And they were pampered. They were idols. They were treated as heroes. And they had a wonderful time over there. That's why many of them stayed, because they found that they were like gods on many occasions.
Yeah.
Huh? And also, some of the black players that came to Mexico, let me use this term because it applies very well, they become Cubanized. There was this fellow who was an American player and played for the team of Mazatlan, my hometown, and he noticed that the Cuban players were idolized, and he noticed that they were very happy and easygoing, and he began imitating them. And then people began thinking that he was also Cuban, and they began speaking Spanish to him, so he had to learn Spanish to try to pass as Cuban. And he adopted his own nickname, El Grillo, and he would imitate the sound of the crickets very well,
oh, yeah.
And he was very popular.
Enrique, one more question about Mexico.
Sure.
I was watching that baseball series that came out a few years ago. Ken Burns had that series on PBS, and they were talking about some of the black American players and players like Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson.
Right.
They also played in Mexico, too, didn't they?
Do you
recall anything about that?
No, it was a little bit before my time. My father used to talk about Satchel Paige as kind of a phenomenon, a monster. He never saw anybody throw the ball so hard as Satchel Paige did, but I never saw him myself. And
yeah, my father...
Before my time.
Yeah, my father mentioned to me that he did play in Cuba. They made so much money because they would play these exhibition games throughout the Caribbean. But I know that I saw some videos and some pictures of Satchel Paige playing in Cuba. Well, Enrique, I know your time is limited. We want to thank you very much for participating. Do you guys have any questions for Enrique?
Yes, I noticed that the Mexico has a Mexican Hall of Fame. And I see Martin Diego there. Martin Diego is one of the best baseball, one of the best Cuban baseball players ever. He's in the Cuban Hall of Fame also. He's everywhere.
Well, actually, Ramon Bragaña is also in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I have the names here. I'm going to mention them.
Right.
As for, they go by years, okay? And you have, 64, you have Martin Diego, Lázaro Salazar, and Ramon Bragaña.
Right.
Then you have in 73, Roberto Ortiz, Agustin Bejarano.
Bejarano.
Mm-hmm. Right. And 74, Agustin Verde. Then 77, Santos Amaro. 79, Basilio Brujo Rosell.
Rosell.
Mm-hmm. So you remember all these guys. 82, Mario Ariosa.
Mario Ariosa, it took a long time to get there. He was the longest player, Cuban player in the Mexican League.
And I have four
more. 20 years.
I have four more here. Well, you have Adolfo Luque, who was a great Cuban baseball player also in '85. Then, of course, like you mentioned, Ruben Amaro, who was the son of the... And Lino Donoso, Amaro Maestri. These are umpires. I'm sorry.
Two umpires.
Right? You even remember the umpires. Very good.
Yeah, because Maestri was really kind of a star at the time. And Lázaro Salazar came into the Hall of Fame as a manager more than a player.
How many teams were in these leagues?
I'm sorry?
How many teams were in the league?
In the Mexican League, the Summer League, it came out to 12, as many
wow.
as 12. But
yeah.
on the Pacific League, it was always only three from the state of Sinaloa and three from the state of Sonora. And usually stayed that way. In the state of Sinaloa, it was Atlán, Culiacán, and Los Mochis. And from the state of Sonora, it was Navajo, Obregón, and Hermosillo. Guaymas now and then with Garín, but they were not really steady. Now the Pacific League goes all the way to Baja California. It has Mexicali and Tijuana, too.
I want to ask you one question, Enrique. Is baseball very popular now in Mexico at the moment, right now?
It is still, but regionally. There are states in which there is no competition from soccer. My state, for instance, Sinaloa, Sonora, no doubt, mm-hmm. totally. Baseball is the game.
Is there
but
the West Coast?
Soccer is everywhere.
Soccer has taken off. From what I see.
Oh yeah.
So you say the West Coast still, because they have. I guess yeah. Okay.
Let me ask you.
This is very interesting, Enrique. Very interesting.
Enrique, let me ask you one more question. One more question,
sure.
Enrique. There was another pitcher too with a Mexican connection, and I was just thinking about this as Jose was reading some of these names. Luis Tiant, his father.
Oh, of course.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, his father, right? His father pitched in Mexico.
Oh,
he also pitched up here. His father
Luis
also...
Tiant himself played
in
Mexico.
Yes,
one
I was
going to
say that. I remember.
Yeah,
I remember that Luis Tiant, I think he came through Mexico, and I think he played in Mexico.
He played over there in the Summer League,
mm-hmm.
which was unusual at the time because most of the big leaguers would play in Mexico during the winter because they were off. And most of the teams in the Pacific Coast have arrangements with the leagues, with the teams in the major leagues.
Yeah, I think Luis Tiant came to Mexico.
Right.
To Cleveland. You know what? Interesting. I was looking at this is very interesting. What I'm going to say to you. I was looking in the. There's a guy who pitched for the Yankees yesterday. His name is Mitres, right? And I was looking him up. I was trying to figure out where this guy came from, and. While I was looking, I see Aceves, who's pitching for the Yankees now. I don't know if you know who he is. He's a relief pitcher for the Yankees. Are you familiar with the name?
I don't think I know him. I don't think so.
Yeah, well, you got to check it out. You got to check the roster of the Yankees. And I'm saying, well, where does this guy come from? And he's been only playing for 2 years with the Yankees. And I'm saying, well, 2 years? This guy, well, he looks like he's like in his late 20s. Huh? And you know where he came from? He came from the Mexican League.
Uh-huh.
He came from the Mexican League now. He's pitched with the Yankees for 2 years. He's pitched 78 innings, and his ERA is 2.48. And he's 6-1 or 6-2.
Six and one.
He's a really
good pitcher. Where did they get this guy from? You know, what's going on down in the Mexican League? I mean, if he pitches another 78 innings like that and keeps his ERA less than 3, hey, we got to start looking. Hey, where did this guy come from, you know?
I will check it out. It's very interesting. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, said
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Enrique, one last question. I know you got to go, but I got to ask you. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. One last question. Who do you think are the two greatest Mexican players, the greatest pitcher and the greatest, let's say, position player or the greatest hitter? Who in your mind would be – these are Mexicans, not Cubans, but the two Mexicans that you would think – are the two greatest players who played in the major leagues, pitcher and hitter?
Well, playing in the major leagues, I would have to say Vinny Castilla would be the position player, no doubt. He was really outstanding, a great batter, wonderful third baseman, and he was long playing, along with Aurelio Rodriguez, who I admired tremendously. I thought he was an outstanding player, too. unfortunately.
Who played with the Yankees. He played with the Yankees at the end of
Detroit. Right? Oh, are you talking about Aurelio?
Rodriguez. They got to put
Aurelio,
the
Yeah. Unfortunately, Aurelio Rodriguez was killed in an accident.
Very young, unfortunately. And the pitcher, well, no doubt, it has to be Fernando. Who else?
Gotta be Fernando.
He was great. I remember those games he used to pitch against Gooden, and they used to be some tremendous games, like two hitters.
Fernando Mania got us all.
Yeah, that must have helped the popularity of baseball in Mexico, I guess, right?
Undoubtedly. It revived it, really.
We need someone else like that.
I agree.
Hey, Enrique, be careful about mentioning Fernando Valenzuela to Yankee fans, because remember Game 3, 1981 World Series, Fernando goes out there and pitches a complete game and turns that series around. So Yankee fans, when you say Fernando Valenzuela, they remember that 1981 series. Enrique, thank you very much for participating.
It's my pleasure.
We got to do it again.
Baseball is the most wonderful thing for me.
And as I said in the pregame show, Enrique,
your
wife is also a baseball fan. Now, that's amazing. When you have a wife who's a baseball fan, what can be better than that?
That's why we've been together almost 40 years.
That's right. All right,
Enrique.
Have a wonderful day.
Hold on.
Thank you, Enrique.
I want to say this about you and your wife. Baseball is a beautiful thing.
No doubt.
All right, Enrique. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Enrique.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, and good night.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Wasn't that great, guys, talking to Enrique? It's really great to talk to a baseball fan. And every time Enrique and I get together socially, we end up talking a great deal about baseball. But you know what I said about his wife is true. His wife is a huge baseball fan, too. So that means that she likes to go to the games. And, most of us, our wives put up with baseball. I think they see it as part of the package, if you know what I mean.
I'll tell you one thing. My mother and father, they watch every single game together. I mean, that's why they've been around for so long together. But I mean, when I don't know, I'm working, and I don't know the score, I just call my mother up because she tells me what the score is right there. She's watching every game from the beginning to the end. We're right next to each other together.
My mother, it's interesting because my mother, she's very, she's an enthusiast, She's enthusiastic about things, and baseball, following the team that you like, that you love. My father's a little bit more reserved. But there's a story with my brother and I, like I said, we came in '63, and through years, we follow every sport that was on hand. We follow, basketball with the Knicks. We follow the Yankees. By the way, I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. Okay, I don't know if you're a Cowboy fan or not.
We are Cowboy fans. Yeah.
Oh, I'm a big guy, and I have to live with a lot of Giant fans around me, but they can't understand why I'm a Cowboy fan, but that's a long story. But, we've watched basketball, like I said, basketball, even hockey we used to dip into a little bit. And through the years, my mother would be like watching this whole yelling and screaming going on in the house. And like, we never really figured it, she said, did they win? Okay, that's it. Never. And then all of a sudden in 1996, the Yankees are going into the World Series. And I get a phone call from my mother. She says, are you watching the game? And I'm going, what, the World Series? Yeah, I'm watching the World Series. And she just rattles on about this and that. And I'm saying, I can't believe this woman, all these years, us jumping up and down, and she, cooking and moving around, never asked the question, like, who plays for what, what position. And she just became a nut, a Yankee nut fan.
What she says the best. When the Yankees are batting, when they're playing, it's like the game's down on the line, And the player, Yankee player batting. I don't know if your mom, Sylvia, gets into baseball. But what my mother always says is, no te ponche, no te ponche.
Well, my...
¿Para qué traen el basura ese? Ese hombre es un desastre. Es un
She goes, she leaves the room, she goes to the bedroom, and she sits down, and I'm not going to see the game anymore. I can't, my father just sits there calmly.
The playoffs.
And then he goes, ven pa' acá, que ganamos mejor. She'll go running into the game.
No, you're reminding me of my mother, because my mom and dad watch a lot of baseball, too. And, of course, my mom and dad grew up in the great tradition of Cuban baseball, you know, Havana Almendares. And it was a tremendous rivalry back in the 50s. Tremendous rivalry in the old winter league in Cuba. But my mom is the same thing. You know, when she's watching the game and the manager brings in a left-hander to pitch to a left-hander, my mother always go, oh, there goes el librito. Right? She always goes with the little book, you know, el librito. You know, and every time that the strategy doesn't work, my mother always goes, ay, ay, el librito, no? They always want to use el librito, you know, but anyway, no, I tell you, baseball has been a part of our family as well, and growing up Cuban, baseball is a very big thing. Now, let me ask you a question. You said Vinny was going to be calling us later, because I have a call here from 310, but I'm not sure if this is Vinny.
No, but take it.
Yeah,
let's
take it, and let's take it and see who's calling in from the 310. Let's see, 310, can you tell us who you are?
Yes, this is Diva from Blog for Cuba, listening in.
Oh, okay, yeah. How are you?
I'm great.
Hi,
great
Diva,
show.
How are you
great.
Doing?
Thank you very much. I think we got Vinny here. You're welcome to stay with us, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's say hello to Vinny. I think he's coming in right now. Hey, Vinny, how are you?
All right, Sylvia, how are you tonight?
Just doing great. Welcome to the panel. Now we got our panel complete, right? We got the outfielder, left fielder, center fielder, right fielder, right?
The Lou Brothers.
Who's the center fielder in this group? Is it Vinny or Jose or Felix? Who's the center fielder?
I'll take Vinny because he's a speedster. Vinny could cover the whole ground.
All right, guys. I'll tell you what. We're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back, and then we're gonna try to put together our baseball team here, okay? So let's take a little break, and we'll be right back and talk a little baseball.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we have quite a panel tonight. Jose Reyes, Felix Reyes, and Vinny Puente. But I've got some news here for my Yankee friends. top of the seventh, the Rangers are leading the Red Sox 3-1, which means that if that score holds, the Rangers are going to sweep the Red Sox. So I got to ask you guys, I was asking Jose before, Vinny, you guys, you got to beat the Angels. We need you to do that. I mean, we're helping you guys by beating the Red Sox.
Yeah,
so, Vinny, can you help us by beating the Angels?
One thing you need to worry about as far as the Angels is that Mr. Holliday is going to be traded probably before the 31st. And my feeling is that the Angels are the ones that are going to get him.
Well, that would be that would change everything. You're right about that.
Change a lot. Yeah.
That would definitely.
We could help him. We take him.
No, you're right. But that would definitely, you know, that would make the Angels the hands-on favorite. But here's the thing though that might stop that, and that the Blue Jays are looking to basically they want to take your top three or four prospects out of the system. And I don't know how deep the Angels are. I just don't know in their farm system. I will tell you this. The Rangers, for the last two seasons, have been the best farm system, according to Baseball America. So we are really, really deep in talent. We have a wonderful first baseman in AA and AAA. We've got some very good young pitching. Now, if it was up to me, I would not give up these young players, okay? Because you bring in a guy like Holliday, maybe he puts you in, maybe he doesn't, but then you're not going to keep him anyway because, you know, he's going to become a free agent, and then you're giving up all these young players. You know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this young left-hander with the White Sox, John Danks. He was a former Ranger. So, you know, so I'm not real crazy about giving up on young players. I just think that it always comes back to haunt you later on. But I think you're right. I mean, if Holliday ends up with the Angels, then I think you can write off the American League West because the Angels will win that particular division. Well, let's get into the topic tonight, guys, and that is putting together an all-Cuban baseball team. And I thought we would kind of go around by different positions and well, let's start with first base. My choice. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This was a. First of all, we have to establish. In other words, as an example, Tony Perez started as a third baseman, right?
Well, you're right.
Are we going to make him a third baseman, or are we going to make him a first baseman?
Well, that's.
And another thing too is steroids. You know, Palmeiro. You know what I mean? Is he going to be included in this conversation?
Great
you know what
question.
I mean?
Let me explain it this way. I think for the purpose of tonight, I would include him.
We have to include steroids. We don't even know who's you know. Tomorrow a story will come out that Tony Perez was on steroids. You know, you don't know.
No, you're right.
Who knew that Manny Ramirez was doing pills? You know,
right.
I'm sure. You know, so we can't.
He's doing more than pills. Manny Ramirez is doing more than pills, but
whatever.
Yeah, no, but you're right, guys. In the sense that I think we're just going to include him. I mean, that would be my choice. Let's include.
All right. Now, what about the position? In other words,
like Tony Perez, who started out as a third baseman. You're right. He started out as a third baseman, but he had most of his big years and much of his fame came at first. I would rate him as a first baseman.
I would rate him as a first baseman too. But
yeah, I never knew he came up as a third baseman. I thought I knew him as a first baseman my whole life.
Yeah, but we have to understand something, guys. We're putting a team together that we're going to put out there to play. All right.
Yeah.
So we need to put Tony Perez to play third base and Rafael Palmeiro to play first.
Right.
And I think we go that way.
No, that could be, and that's a good point. I had not thought about that because
you may be
right that at the end of the night our best baseman is Tony.
Because you know if we have
we'll
be the DH.
Who?
Well, yeah, that's right.
We can't put him in the outfield.
No. We know enough about that here in Texas, but I tell you what, we can put Canseco's twin brother as a DH. How is that?
He can be the
bad boy. But
he can be the bad boy.
Yeah, he can be. Okay, but I tell you what, I realize that some of these things we'll have to be flexible on. But my choice, and I kind of like to go around, but my choice for first baseman would be Tony Perez, and that's because he won two World Series as a first baseman. He played for the Cincinnati Reds. He played with a bunch of Hall of Famers. So I would put Tony at first base. Obviously, Palmeiro would be a very close second, but I would go with Tony. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I guess we're going to go in the direction of the greatest, you know, the best at their position, and being a Cuban, I guess we have to go with that, yeah.
He's also from my mother's hometown. Did you know that?
At least Palmeiro for DH, if we're going to include the DH.
Okay,
that's true.
Wait for the DH later. We'll get to the DH later. Let's just look at first base right now. I say
okay.
Tony Perez. What do you guys say?
I say okay, but, you know,
I like it.
Who's going to play third base? Okay.
Well, I have an idea for that.
What about you, Pepe? Why don't you play third base, Pepe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, why not?
That's what you used to play.
We may end up putting Tony at third and Palmeiro at first base. I realize that's a good point you're making. But I would just go with Tony at first base, and then maybe we can move him to third later. What about second base, guys? Who do you pick at second base?
Ooh.
See,
I've been going ever since we started this. I've been going through Wikipedia trying to think of a second baseman.
Well, here are the two that I put these two on the table, okay? Let me put these two names on the table.
Oh, wait. I got one. Hold on. We got Julio and Javier.
Well, okay, but I've got two other names, and the
good thing
about these two guys is that they can play third base. One of these guys could move to third base, although he did not become Tony Taylor and Cookie Rojas.
Great call.
I thought Cookie Rojas too. Tony Taylor, I thought also, but Tony Taylor.
Wait a minute, Cookie Rojas. Yeah, Cookie Rojas was the second baseman. Yeah, you're right. I thought it was a shortstop.
Now, Cookie Rojas
Tony Taylor of the Philadelphia Phillies, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Tony Taylor and Cookie Rojas were with the Phillies together.
Wow.
And this was like in the '60s. And what happened was that eventually the Phillies moved Cookie Rojas. And they moved him to the Kansas City Royals when they were an expansion team. So Cookie Rojas was the second baseman for the Kansas City Royals during their expansion period. And he was eventually replaced by Frank White. Remember him?
Frank White
at second base.
Yeah.
So Cookie Rojas was a very effective second baseman. And not a great hitter, but he was a good number two hitter in the lineup. He would always make contact. So I would go with him. I did not realize that Julian Javier was Cuban, though. I thought he was Puerto Rican.
I thought he was.
Oh, that I.
Yeah. Oh, then I made a mistake.
No, I didn't know
Cookie,
that he was
you know
Cuban.
What Cookie, thought, you know what Cookie's real name was? Octavio.
Octavio Rojas.
Octavio Cookie
and
Rojas.
And I'll give
Octavio.
You one more. I'll give you another trivia information about him, guys, that this is going to floor you. Cookie Rojas, Octavio Rojas, was the last batting champion of the Cuban Winter League.
That's a great trivia question.
That is a great trivia question. The last Cuban Winter League was 1960-1961. And Octavio Rojas, they used to call him Octavio Rojas at the time, was the last batting champion. Great trivia question, if you ever want to get somebody. I don't know whether those records are publicly available. I just happen to know that from reading about him. But also, another thing, he has a son, Victor Rojas, who is a great baseball analyst and for many years was the voice of the Texas Rangers until he became one of the analysts on MLB.com, Victor Rojas. A good baseball family, the Rojas family. But I would go with him. I would go with Octavio Rojas at second base. Everybody agree with me on that?
I agree with you.
You know,
I'm
surprised.
Tony Taylor,
man. Wow.
I'll tell you one thing. The kid from the Chicago White Sox. Although now they put him on they made him a shortstop now. It's going to be one of the best, you'll see.
Ramirez? Yeah, you're right. He looks real sharp. He could be very, very good. You're right. Okay, guys, let's move to shortstop. That's going to be tougher.
That's easy.
I got the only shortstop for us. Bert Campanaris.
Campy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Campy's the only one.
How about Zoilo Versailles?
Dagoberto Campanaris Blanco.
Right, but what about Versailles? Zoilo Versailles.
Zoilo Versailles was good for a short period, whereas Bert Campanaris anchored the Oakland Athletics team that won 3 in a row in the early 70s.
Yep.
He was the anchor of that infield. He was a winner. He was also the first player to play all 9 positions in the game. And he was steady. He led the league in stolen bases a couple of years. I think he's just a strike.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think you're right. I have to go with Campanaris, too. I think he was the most complete Cuban shortstop, although you have to give honorable mention to Versailles. And another very good shortstop too, Leo Cárdenas. Leonardo Cárdenas. You got to give him honorable mention. But I agree with you guys. I think you got to go with Campy. Not only was he a great shortstop, he was a heck of a leadoff hitter.
Yeah, he played for the Yankees too, and he played for the Yankees very well. He was actually the shortstop in the Dave Rigetti no hitter for the Yankees.
Who was that?
Bert Campanaris played for the Yankees in the early 80s.
Is that
and,
right? I didn't know
that. Yeah. He finished his career with the Yankees.
So he was the shortstop when Rigetti threw the no-hitter?
The no-hitter against the Red Sox.
Yeah. That was 4th of July.
83, wasn't it?
83, I think.
Yeah.
83, yeah.
I didn't realize that Campy was playing shortstop with the Yankees that day. I didn't know that.
Let me ask you, you were a big Minnesota Twins fan, right?
Absolutely.
Now, when they had both Zoilo Versailles and Leo Cárdenas in the same team, didn't they?
No, not at the same time. Cárdenas followed Versailles.
Okay.
Versailles actually came with the Washington Senators when they moved to Minnesota. He was part of the early 60s Minnesota Twins.
Right.
Had a bunch of the Washington Senators developed some very good young players. In the early 60s, and they went to Minnesota. Bob Allison, Killebrew, Tony Oliva,
Camilo Pacual,
Pedro Ramos, and Zoilo Versailles was with that team. So Zoilo was the MVP of the American League in 65, but clearly by 67, 68, he had pretty much fizzled out, no question about it. And then the Twins made a trade with the Cincinnati Reds. They got Leo Cárdenas, and Leo Cárdenas was their shortstop for the divisional champs in 69 and in 1970 and 1971. And I don't know what happened to Cárdenas after that. He probably retired. But he was a very effective shortstop with the Minnesota Twins. I mean, he was clearly – he also hit 20 home runs one year, which in the late 60s was a pretty good production for a shortstop.
Totally,
Yeah, I definitely would go with Campy Campanaris, though. I think you guys are right about that one. I think he was, but without question, the best one. So we got Tani at first base, Cookie at second, Campy at short. Now, third base is going to be a little hard. I agree with you. We may have to do a little swapping here. I can't think. Who would you put there?
I think the only guy that qualifies still is Tony Taylor because he played third base. I was looking at that before, too. You mentioned it. Yeah.
Okay. Wait a minute, guys. I just thought of somebody. I was Tito Fuentes. Remember him?
Sure, for the Giants.
Yeah, he played with the Giants.
I got a guy better than that. Remember the guy that came out of Cuba and play for the Detroit Tigers for a little while.
Alberto
Garvey.
Did he play third base?
I mean, he played only 3 years. Come on.
He may play. But you can also put Chico Ruiz at third base.
He's an outfielder, though, too.
Yeah, but you can put, if you really, look, here's the thing. When we put together the old Cuban team, guys, we're going to, we up front, we know that third base is going to be our weak position because we just haven't had a lot of great Cubans there. But we can put Tony Taylor, I agree with you. Tito Fuentes can play third base. But remember Chico Ruiz, who was a utility player? You could put him in there. So we could platoon. We can platoon third base with a lot of different guys. And
why don't we just put Tony Perez on third?
I like Barbaro Garbe, actually. That's a good call, Felix.
Yeah, he had a solid.
He was a solid player, man. He was like, as a rookie in 84, he played 110 games, appeared at first base, made third base.
He went to the World
Series. He hit 287, 52 RBIs. I don't know.
And he went to the World Series, right? Wasn't that 84 the year they won the Tigers?
Yes. Yes, he played for the with the Bombers.
We could put him, although, again, I think, guys, that's a position we're going to have to platoon. Because I don't see, unless we put, as someone said, we put Tony Perez at third base and Rafi at first, if you want to do that permanently, I can understand. But, let's do that. Let's put Rafi at first and Perez at third base. Is everybody with me on that?
Absolutely,
okay. Yeah,
that's
because
a good call.
Yeah, that's not a bad call. And then, we can rotate. We can have Tony Taylor as a utility infielder, Tito Fuentes, Chico Ruiz. Now, there was, guys, a Cuban third baseman. And this is a real name. This is like, I don't even know if he may have played in the majors 1 or 2 years. Miguel de la Hoz.
Never heard of him.
Yeah,
no,
Miguel de la Hoz. De la Hoz, D-E-L-A-H-O-S, three different words, de la Hoz. He did play with the Milwaukee Braves in the 60s. Not very well-known guy. I mean, he was more of a utility player, but he did play third base, so that could be another utility guy. But
we could also have as a utility player Ray Ordóñez. He was pretty good there for a while.
Hey, see, now that's the one. I don't know how I missed him. Especially you guys from New York, how did you miss him?
He played for the Mets.
That's how we missed him, Michael.
He was here for 3-4 years, and he was a great fielder. But he was like
He couldn't hit for nothing.
Real fast. Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't hit either. That's why.
Couldn't hit. Yeah.
But he was a great glove, if I recall.
Oh yeah, I saw him make some plays I never seen in my life again, and it's unbelievable.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he was amazing. Well, guys, let's go to the outfield. I mean, now we got a little bit more options in the outfield. I mean, I guess I put Tony Oliva in right field. I think that's hands down.
Tony Oliva,
And Mini Miñoso, Orestes Miñoso in left field. That would be my other choice. Now, center field is I'm not sure who would play center field. Maybe Tony Gonzalez. Who do you guys think?
Diego Seguí.
Well, Diego Seguí was a pitcher, though.
Yeah. No, that's right, though. He was a pitcher.
Yeah,
what about Luis Gonzalez?
Yes.
Very good ball, Pepe.
Very good.
I like that.
How do you think? Hell, man. I'm on a ball here.
Yeah, but who's
going to
play
center field? We got the outfield. We have the outfield.
But who's going to play center field in that outfield? Somebody's got to get the ball.
Hey, guys, there's a question. Pedro Ramos, remember him, 1955? Did he play second base now?
Pedro Ramos was the pitcher.
He was a relief pitcher.
He was a
pitcher. Yeah.
When he mentioned, when Silvio mentioned the names, I said, holy shit, I forgot about Pedro Ramos. He was a good relief pitcher.
Oh, he was great.
He was also a starting pitcher. He pitched for the Yankees too.
Yeah, he also started.
That's right.
He was the starting pitcher with the Senators and with the Twins. But I think the challenge is who's going to play center field because I mean I don't see one guy who can play center field. I can't think of one guy. Obviously Oliva and Miñoso, in left and right. I'm trying to think who would play center field.
Oh, then you put Gonzalez in right field and put Oliva in center. Well, Oliva didn't have the links, so we have to put him on left.
But I thought Gonzalez played center field. Didn't he play center field too? No, I guess
I thought he played center field with the Houston Astros.
Yeah, that's right. I think he started as a center fielder.
He started as a center fielder, I believe. I remember him on Kiner's corner, or Ralph Kiner, when he first came up with the Houston Astros, and I think he played center field back then.
Hey guys, what about this young guy who played Sanchez, who played with is it Ricky Eddie Sanchez or who I thought played with the Mets? Who
Alex
was,
Sanchez.
Yeah, was he was he Cuban? I don't know.
I see here 2001 Alex Sanchez. I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
I'll look him up.
But
how about catcher,
pretty,
guys? How about catcher?
I'm dying
to find out because I have no idea.
Surprised that
we're
having trouble here.
Well, you know, the only guy that I can think of as a catcher is a catcher who played Paul Casanova. He played in the 70s, I think, with the what was then the Washington Senators, who became the Rangers. But he's the only one. There was also another catcher, Jose Ascue or Jorge Ascue, but that's a long time ago. And then, of course, probably the all-time greatest Cuban catcher, although not a name that any of us would have ever seen play, and that's Fermín Guerra, who was a manager, was better known as a manager than a catcher. But that would be, that's a tough position, too. There are not a lot of Cubans out there. I would have to go with Casanova. I don't know if any of you guys remember
him. I agree
with
you. That's a great call. Paul Casanova, he played for the Senators, then the Texas Rangers. He had a long career. He had a long career. 6-7 season was Casanova's best. He played 141 games, had a fielding percentage of .984, and was tied. He got some MVP votes that year, which is rare for a catcher on borderline.
Did he ever? Did he ever make the All-Star team? I don't remember.
I'm looking here to see. I don't think he did. He continued. His fielding percentages were high, .985, .984. He played into the early 70s. He was a journeyman after the Rangers. He played for the Braves. For the Braves and the Cardinals after that.
Yeah, I remember him in the early 70s with the Senators before they came to Texas. And he was a very good catcher, very good defensive catcher. And he was very quick, very fast, had a great arm. But I didn't know how long he lasted. I would have to go with him as the best catcher among the Cuban players. So we got Rafi, Octavio Rojas, Campi, Tony Perez, Oliva Miñoso. Did you say Gonzalez in center field?
Luis Gonzalez.
Okay. And Casanova behind the plate. So that's not a bad team. That's a pretty good team. You got a potential Hall of Famer in Palmeiro, and I know that the steroid thing is probably going to hurt him, but he certainly put over 3,000 hits. You got Cookie Rojas at second base, who not a Hall of Famer, but a very good player. Campi at shortstop. I mean, you could argue that he's a marginal Hall of Famer. Then you got, of course, Tony Perez, who is in the Hall of Fame. Miñoso and Oliva. I would argue Oliva belongs in the Hall of Fame. I could make a case for that. Gonzalez, pretty good player in recent history. And then Casanova, not a Hall of Famer, but an adequate, very adequate catcher who can certainly, he can catch 120, 130 games a season and be very, very respectable. For you. So why don't we do this, guys? Why don't we take a little break, just a quick break here, just sort of catch our breath a little bit, and then when we come back, we're going to, we're going to put together a pitching staff, and that's going to be a lot of fun. So let's take a little break. Well, if you're tuning in to Blog Talk Radio and you're wondering what these four crazy Cubans are doing, well, the four crazy Cubans are Vinny Puente, Jose Reyes, Felix Reyes, and yours truly, Silvio Canto. And we're putting together an all-Cuban team, and we've done quite well, I think, so far. We've got Rafi Palmeiro at first base, Octavio Rojas at second, Campy Campaneras at short, Tony Perez at third base, Miñoso, Oliva, and Gonzalez in the outfield, and Casanova behind the plate. And now comes, guys, this is the key, most important part of any baseball team, and that is the pitching staff. Right-handed pitcher, my number one choice has to be Luis Tiant. What do you guys think?
That's my number one choice.
Yeah. Well, guys, I knew you were going to jump on Tiant right away. Because you forgot a Duker, huh?
No, well,
I think he'll be a starting pitcher, too.
Well, El Duque can be part of your starting rotation.
I'm with you on that. He's the number one guy. Tiant, yeah, he proved it in the majors. I agree.
He did it longer.
Now, Tiant also pitched for the Yankees at the end of his career, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he pitched for the Red Sox.
He was very good for the Yankees.
Yeah, he was very good.
Yep.
So our number one, well, not necessarily number one starter, but clearly one of the four starters would be Tiant. I agree with you, El Duque. Now, I think we need a left-hander here, guys, and that's why I'm going to go with Mike Cuellar as our left-hander.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very good.
Yep. I will go
Cuellar. Yeah, that's
also
a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer. Mike Cuellar was the dominant pitcher in the American League in the 60s.
Yeah, he was great. 185 career wins. And here's the amazing part about that, guys. He won 139 games over a seven-year span. That's unbelievable.
Great.
139 games. He won, let me just kind of look at it, 23-69, 24 in 1970.
Wow.
20 in 1971 when he was one of four Baltimore Orioles. That was the year the Orioles had four 20-game winners.
Mm-hmm.
And then he won 18, 18, 22, 14.
He was very dominant. He might be borderline Hall of Fame.
Well, I think the only reason...
I think the only reason
he's not in the Hall of Fame is because his career was basically with the Orioles, those 7 years with the Orioles. He came in kind of late. He was 30 years old by the time he became a starter. He kind of bounced around a little bit. But you're right. I think if he had pitched, if he had won another 50 games, let's see, if he had another three good seasons, no question, he'd be a candidate for the Hall of Fame. But
he was just only slightly less dominant than Sandy Koufax was for a comparable amount of years. You know, you could say that he was as dominant in the American League. Well, would you almost as dominant because Sandy Koufax was overly dominant. But
well, he was a different kind of pitcher. Koufax was a fastballer, and Cuellar was a what they used to call the junk ball.
He was a changeup.
Don't forget about McNally and Steve Carton too. You know, they dominated. Lefty still pretty dominant too.
You're right.
Cuellar was good. I remember him. And my father, you know, being Cuban, would always took pride in watching the Orioles play the Yankees, and you know, didn't root for Cuellar to beat the Yankees, but wanted him to pitch a good game, and the Yankees win 2-1, but.
It's interesting how that Baltimore team, they didn't really have a lot of hitting, that Baltimore team, but they had pitchers. They were unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, they had, Jim Palmer.
Defense.
Yeah, great defense. They had Jim Palmer. They had Dave McNally, who passed away, by the way, recently. He died of cancer recently. And Mike Cuellar.
Yep.
Pat Dobson.
Dobson.
And then, those four guys. Well, Pat Dobson was with him for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Right. But
he's a flash in the pan.
But the first three, McNally, Palmer, and Cuellar.
Later they had Dennis Martinez,
Dennis Martinez, and Mike Flanagan, and and Scott McGregor that the Orioles took from the Yankees,
right,
and what has to be one of the worst trades the Yankees ever made, when they gave up. This is going to hurt you guys, I'm sorry to say it, but the Yankees gave up Scotty McGregor, Rick Dempsey, and Tippy Martinez to the Orioles, and you got back Grant Jackson, Ellie Hendricks, and Ken Holtzman. Now, those guys were, let me say this, those guys were pretty good in helping you win the 1976 title.
Ken Holtzman,
Yeah, those three guys, Grant Jackson and...
Ken Holtzman came from the Oakland A's teams.
Well, he threw Baltimore, Remember, Kenny Holtzman...
I know, but he was in the Oakland A's teams, the championship
That's right.
teams.
He was part of the Oakland A's team, you know, Catfish Hunter, Ken Holtzman, White of Blue were part of the great pitching staff.
Gene Tennis,
yeah,
Reggie Jackson. Gene Tennis was the all-star... He won the first MVP, I think, Gene Tennis, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I want to mention one guy here, because I never saw him play, but I remember him. Jose Cardable. He was an outfielder.
You know, you're exactly right. You're exactly right, and we missed him.
Yeah, but he was he born in Cuba?
He was.
Danny, his father, Jose.
Danny Cardable.
Yeah, well, Steve, Jose Cardable, his father.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was in the Tony Oliva era.
And what about Jose Cardenal?
There you go. That's another great player, too, that we missed in the outfield. And the other thing, too, I think we need to stretch our requirements a little bit and allow somebody like Posada to be the catcher, because he's half Cuban.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
We have to mention Camilo Pascual, huh?
Camilo Pascual, yeah, definitely. Let's get back to the pitchers.
The
pitchers, we got Tian, we got Cuellar, we got El Duque, we got Camilo Pascual. That's
Duque
a pretty good rotation right there.
Well, Sylvie, do you remember that Minnesota Twin team?
Absolutely.
In 65? Was it 65 when it went to the World Series?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Yeah. I remember
Duque
that
was
team.
Better than Camilo.
Let me ask you, you better get this right. I'm going to ask you this question. You know the emblem in baseball? You know that emblem where you see the
logo,
the logo. Who is that? He's a Minnesota Twin. Do you know who that is, Silvio?
Yeah, the Minnesota Twins logo.
No, the baseball logo.
The baseball logo.
Oh, the
you know
MLB
they
logo with the guy batting with the batting stance.
Yeah.
I guess I don't quite understand your question. You mean the logo they put like on the sleeve?
Major League MLB.
No, you know what?
League
Never
League.
Think if they do a commercial on baseball and it's a Major League
oh,
Baseball.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Logo.
And they have a guy batting.
Yeah. Who
okay,
is that?
I don't know who that is, but
you don't know this.
But you know where that comes from, don't you? That particular logo. That logo comes from 1969. When baseball celebrated 100 years of the Cincinnati Reds.
And who's the guy?
I don't...
He's a Minnesota, Twin.
Was it Killebrew then?
Yes, sir. Very good.
It has to be Killebrew because he's a right-handed batter, yeah.
Killebrew hit... how many home runs did he hit? Like 580-something, right?
583.
573?
Well, Rodriguez is about to catch him now.
Yeah.
What's Rodriguez,
Yeah, and Killebrew, you know, it's interesting. Killebrew is another example, guys, of a guy who started out as a third baseman and became a first baseman.
Yeah,
because he was a third baseman when he first came up, and then he became a first baseman later. So, what about our relief pitcher, guys? Who's gonna come in for relieving? I'm gonna go with a very recent player who I think is very intimidating when he's right, and that's Danny Baez. I mean, this guy is good.
You took the words out of my mouth.
He is good.
Yeah.
Now, who's he pitching with right now? The Orioles?
I think that's the last I heard he was with. He was with the Orioles the last time I saw him, but they were in town this week playing the Yankees, and there was no mention of him. So I don't think he's with the Orioles.
The last time I saw him was Tampa Bay was the last. Yeah, about a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
have Pedro Ramos.
Pedro Ramos would be good too. Although I know it's
we'll
funny thing about
middle relief.
Yeah, but the problem with Pedro Ramos is I know that he he became known as a relief pitcher when he was with the Yankees. But if you look at his career, though, he was primarily a starting pitcher throughout his career. It was Pedro Ramos and Camilo Pascual were really the 1-2 punch of the Minnesota Twins in the early 60s. Now,
what about Jim Catt?
Jim Grant, too.
Mudcat Grant. But Jim Perry? Jim Perry was
Jim Perry, so. Yeah. He pitched. He was very effective, too.
Bringing back great memories now, Bobby Allison,
I think Bobby Allison was very underrated, huh, as an outfielder.
Yeah.
What kind of numbers did he finish with?
I don't know the numbers. It'd be interesting to check out. But he hit 37 home runs 1 year. He was injured many times. I will tell you this. Bobby Allison, and this is a family memory. In 1967, our family, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, and I, we took our first vacation in the United States because we had just bought a car. You know how that goes. And when you first come to the United States, you take the bus for like 3 years, and you finally buy a car.
Where were you living?
Well, this is in Wisconsin. Okay. And our family was... That's right. And then we decided to take a vacation and go like on a weekend to go see the Twins play, and they played the White Sox. And Bob Allison hit the first home run that I ever saw in the major leagues.
Wow, that's great.
He hit a home run, and he was one of my favorite players. I mean, he was a left fielder. He was a number five hitter behind Killebrew. He was one of those guys who, to some extent, the same thing that happened to Ken Griffey's father, who was actually a very good hitter, but he had the misfortune of playing on a nearly all Hall of Fame team, you know? So he was kind of an unknown.
Everybody batted 300 on the Cincinnati Reds team, but you guys are talking about Killebrew. Do you guys remember seeing him in an All-Star game, making the stretch to catch a ball and pulling his hamstring? Now, he tore his hamstring. Remember that, when he did that in the All-Star game?
Sure. No, I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. That's when you get the stories of people that, you know, they don't, you know, you don't want your stars playing the All-Star game because they get hurt. There's been a few like that. But let me ask you before I forget, because I always talk about, I mean, I can name that whole lineup, you know. Who played center field for the Minnesota Twins in the 65 World Series?
Jimmy Hall,
okay.
Yeah, Jimmy Hall, H-A-L-L. He was
Earl Bailey played catcher.
That's right. Earl Bailey played
catcher. Versailles is short. And who played second base?
Carew. He was the manager. No, Carew was not around then.
The guy who played
second base became the manager of the Minnesota Twins about 10 years later. And the name will come to me, but... He was a guy who was this. He became the manager of the Minnesota Twins later.
Yeah.
But
we had Killebrew at third, right?
No. In 65, Killebrew was at first, and Rich Rollins was at third base. Yeah. And then a little bit later, they had Don Mincher, also played a little bit of first base, But the guy who played second base, if any of you have access to an internet, if you check out who was the manager of the Twins, let's say during the mid-70s, that's who the second baseman was in that 65 team. It was not a very well-known player, but a pretty effective player. Guys, I'm getting the flash that the Rangers have just swept the Red Sox.
Nice. And we won today in the afternoon, so that's what makes us three games in first place.
I know. So that's good news for the Yankees.
Two games.
Does anybody have the Angels score? They were tied with Kansas City, I think, the last time I checked. I don't know if anybody can access that, but yeah, the Rangers have just beaten the.
I'm trying to access
Sylvia. Sylvia was the second baseman, Jerry Kendall.
No, it was not him.
Okay. I'm looking at the 65. The 65 Twins had Earl Batty at catcher, Don Mincher at first base, Jerry Kindle at second, Zola Rosai at shortstop, Rich Rollins at third base, Bobby Allison in left field, Jimmy Hall in center, and Tony Oliva in right.
No, it was not Jerry Kendall. It was somebody else.
He played 125 games, Jerry Kendall.
Okay, then. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. But
Frank
Colucci. Where was Kendall?
How about Frank Colucci?
Frank, that's the one who comes to mind. That's who I think, that's who became the manager later. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe he was not the starting
pitcher. I'm sorry. That's right. Kendall was there, too. Frank Colucci.
Yeah,
that was that pitching staff. I don't know why. I loved that. For some reason, I loved that 65.
Well, they were a great team. I will tell you this.
What was the pitching staff there? You had
Cott was really not. Cott was not the number one. Jim Mudcat Grant.
Jim Mudcat Grant
number one. Cott was number two.
Who?
Jim Cott was number two.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Camilo Camilo was hurt much of 1965, so he only won 9 games, and even though he did pitch in the World Series, he was hurt much of the year and didn't contribute a lot. But I think Jim Perry may have been on that team.
Perry was the other guy. Okay.
Yeah, was the other guy. But Camilo, by the time the sad thing about it is that by the time the Minnesota Twins became really a powerhouse in the American League, as they were in the late 60s.
Right.
Camilo was too old and eventually got traded to the Washington Senators. But the greatest years that Camilo had were 61, 62, 63, and 64 when the Twins were too young. They were a very young team and were not quite ready to compete with the Yankees at the time, although there was one year. Yeah, that's right. In fact, 2 years he won 20 games.
Won 2 games,
and
20
yeah,
games.
Yeah,
and he led the league in strikeouts for a couple of years, 3 years.
That's right. He did. Yeah, he did. He was a very effective pitcher during his time. But Vinny, you were mentioning the Minnesota Twins. If you Google Minnesota Twins 1965, there is a man who wrote a book about the Minnesota Twins.
Oh,
and
really?
He's got all kinds of pictures and all kinds of stories. He's a man who was young like us back in 65, and he later on when he became an adult, he wrote a book about the 65 Twins. And I think you'll really, really love that. If you cannot find it, go to my blog where it says search and put Minnesota Twins, because I wrote a post about him a couple of years ago. In fact, I spoke with a guy on the phone. He was a real, probably the most knowledgeable person that I've ever met regarding the 1965 Twins, who were really a very good team. And the only reason they didn't win it all that year was because Sandy Koufax.
One guy.
Yeah. Sandy Koufax just nailed him.
That Drysdale, too.
Yeah,
but didn't
come
back? Didn't Koufax come back on 2 days rest?
He may have, because...
Yeah, I think that's a legend about
that. I remember, I might be wrong, but I'm looking here at the 65 Minnesota Twins, and I don't know, they have first base here, Don Mincher, but they got a... wasn't there a World Series? Kerry Kendall, second, shortstop, Versailles.
I saw the same thing, Pepe.
Rich Rollins, right, he says, yeah. Don't you guys remember Sandy Koufax one time was supposed to pitch a game, and it was Yom Kippur, and he didn't pitch it?
That might have been in 65. No, but you're right. I think you're right. I think he did have – he had that in 65, but he came back.
And he went against Jim Catt, and he lost. He won 3-0, something like that.
Yeah, but he won Game 7. And
he won
Game
7, right?
Yeah, he came back. He
was
Minnesota. In Minnesota.
Yeah, he was unhittable that day, guys.
Yeah, he was unhittable.
I mean, he was unhittable that day. How he didn't pitch a perfect game, I don't know.
Yeah,
They replay that game on MLB.com once in a while, especially in the wintertime.
You're right. I've seen that game on Classic Baseball 2, and yeah. I saw that game, and if you notice, if you really watch that game, he was unhittable that day. I mean, he should have pitched a perfect game that day. That's how tough he was. You know, he pitched one perfect game and three no-hitters, I think.
Yeah.
And I bet you that four no-hitters. I bet if you were to ask the hitters that day on the Minnesota side,
yeah, they said it was
I think most of them probably said, I mean, how didn't this guy pitch a perfect game? Because he was just absolutely unhittable that day. There was just nothing that anybody could do. He was just totally unhittable. And I don't think that anybody got to second base. That's how unhittable he was.
That's the first World Series I remember watching, actually.
Yeah, me too. That was one of the first ones I remember. Well, I remember the 64.
I remember 64 too vaguely, and getting the Cards the next year, and Johnny Keen being the manager. He was the manager for the Cardinals the year before. And then that's when the Yankees got bad in 65. And so we got into the Twins in my household.
Yeah,
because of all the Cubans.
Yeah, that's when the Yankees. After that, they had a bunch of players like Horace.
Yeah,
the Horace Clark
base.
Right, Horace Clark and Roy White came up.
I was reading on Roy White. Roy White was around since '67.
He was steady. He was a steady player too. He was
great. He was great. Number six.
And,
right?
You know what? After he finished over here, he went to Japan and played in Japan like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
You know what? Mel Stottlemyre could have been a Hall of Famer if he was on that team.
Well, he played that was a time, if you guys remember being in New York, that was a time when the Yankees had some pretty good players, Horace Clark, Tom Tresh. Mel Stottlemyre during that.
Mel Stottlemyre was the guy that used to make the All-Star game every year, and then every now and then, Roy White would make it. Maybe one or 2 years, but Mel Stottlemyre was like the only guy who used to represent the Yankees.
Look at the guys that the Yankees lost. I mean, Mickey Mantle hung around for a while. But you lost Bobby Richardson, you lost Tony Kubek, you know, you lost Yogi Berra,
Pete Boyer.
You know, Elton Howard.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. That was it for these guys.
Then we had Jake Gibbs. We had Jake Gibbs at catcher. We had Bill Kinney playing third base.
Right.
Clark at second. Joe Pepitone was around for a couple of years.
Joe Pepitone, Pepitone.
65, 66.
Tom Tresh was on shortstop.
Michael came later on.
Yeah, and Bobby Mercer came up at that time too, didn't he?
Correct.
Bobby Mercer came up in the late 60s.
Yeah,
in the late 60s.
And the Slotty Floater. What was his name?
That's right.
Mr. Hamilton.
Yeah, and then Fritz Peterson and Ron Kekich, right?
Yeah.
Swap
wise.
Yeah. Un cuadro. Yeah, tremendo cuadro.
Right.
What was the trade? Was we got from Baltimore, we got Kekich.
That's right.
And then Peterson, they swapped Weiss. Remember that?
Yeah, I don't remember that trade, but I do remember the big scandal about the two of them trading wives. I do remember that scandal, but I don't remember.
One is still married to the one, you know, to the other one. The other one didn't work out.
Here's another name that you Yankee fans may remember. Right before 76, you guys had Bobby Bonds for a couple of years.
Oh, my God. I remember Bobby Bonds. I saw Bobby Bonds play, man, and he was one of the quickest bats I ever seen in my life. It was amazing. And I remember the Yankees, because back in the early 70s, what you did, you watch the standings, you know, and I remember the Yankees slowly moving up. And Bobby Bonds was on fire. And I remember him getting hurt out in Cleveland. We're playing out in Cleveland, and he hurt his knee. And as soon as he got hurt, that was it.
That was the Bill Burden Yankees.
Yeah.
1974.
But you know who we got for Bobby Bonds? When we traded Bobby Bonds to the Angels, we got Mickey Rivers.
and we got Joe Figueroa. We got
Okay.
Great ball players. You know?
Yeah, Figueroa was the pitcher, right?
Yeah.
Ed Figueroa. Ed Figueroa.
Ed Figueroa.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, we're just about out of time. It's been,
yeah, the closer has to be Contreras. Jose Contreras could be the closer.
That's right.
One, yeah.
That's right. But, guys, we're just about out of time. I want to thank all three of you for joining me, and you know, we'll try to do a follow-up on your show. When are you guys doing a show again?
Tomorrow, 9 o'clock, we have a Cuban Yanks fan.
Oh, gosh, what a shame. I cannot join you.
We're going to be in a happy mood.
Yeah.
You know what? One thing we missed out, we should have put the lineup. Who's going to bat first, second, third?
Oh, that's a good one.
That we missed out on. But hey,
well,
yeah.
Anyway, we got to leave that. Let's leave that pending for the next show. But I would give you a clue. Campy is my leadoff hitter.
who's going to bat second? Do we put Cookie Rojas?
Where do we put Mini Mendoza?
Where do we put him to bat? We know Oliva's going to be third. We know Perez will be fourth.
I put Tony Pettis fourth.
Yeah.
Maybe Raffy fifth. See, the problem.
Oliva definitely third. Oliva third.
Yeah,
definitely.
But Mignoso was very, very similar to Oliva, the same kind of hitter.
Yeah.
So you know, you hate to have him bat six, but you almost have to in that lineup.
Was he fast?
Yes, Mignoso. Yes. Yeah, he was.
We're gonna have to put him up second.
Well, you're right. You're right about that. But the problem though. He was not a good number two hitter, whereas Cookie Rojas was. Cookie Rojas was a great bat handler, and if you have a leadoff hitter like Campy who's going to be stealing, then Cookie Rojas really is a better strategy move. But I tell you what, why don't we? I won't be able to join you tomorrow night because I've got a commitment tomorrow night. But the next time you let me know, Jose, when you're going to do the next show, and. We'll do the lineup because it's really interesting all of the amazing possibilities with this lineup.
Yeah.
But I want to thank all of you, Vinny. Thank you,
Jose.
Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Felix. Thank you very much. You guys were great, and I think we had a great time. This was great.
Oh yeah, it was fun.
Thank you very much to everybody who listened. I'm going to have the link on my blog, and I guess you guys will do the same. And maybe we can get more listeners through the link. And by the way, let's say thanks to Enrique. He may be listening. Yeah, Enrique was absolutely great.
It was a wonderful.
Yeah, he
that
really
was,
added
I,
a lot to
I,
the show.
I certainly learned something today, boy.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but,
great.
Hey, this is
thank
a great
you,
night
thank
for
you
the
for
Yankees.
Having me.
Hey, guys, this is a great night for the Yankees. You got to talk about the Yankees. We beat the Red Sox. I mean, this should happen every day.
Yeah, right. Well, we just need Kansas City to beat the Angels. That's it now.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for participating, and you guys have a great evening. And we're going to close it with a little Cuban music, like we always do. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.